Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. Hi, everybody. The year is 1960. The album is The Button-Down Mind of Bob Newhart. The artist is obviously Bob Newhart. My guest is Brian Kiley. Thank you for being here.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Real quick, should we talk about... Do you want to talk about the book first? You want to talk about the album first?
Whatever you want.
Okay. You have a book, and you just brought it, and I need to read it now.
Sure. I just thought I'd give you a copy of my book. It's called The Amazing Adventure, Misadventures of Rory Collins. Let me get the name wrong. That's always good. it came out in November. So,
thank you very much for bringing
it. Yeah.
I'm always excited to read new things.
Thanks. It's actually a lot darker and dirtier than my act. Like, if you're used to my act, you're like, hey, what's going on?
Right.
It's like, sorry. But it's nice to actually do something different for once.
Of course. I mean, people are, when they settle in for a book at the very least, I mean, not only do you have a captive audience, but, you know, do you get to take some more chances?
I think so, absolutely. And it was very liberating for me to,
I imagine.
To write something other than a Larry King is old joke,
you right. know? So you wanted to pick the Button-Down Mind, and somehow in 4.5 years we've only done it once, and like I was telling you, it was one of the first two mistake episodes. We have not recovered either of those albums, even though I love both of them desperately.
Great.
But why did you, first of all, why'd you pick this album?
You know, I've always been a Bob Newhart fan, mm-hmm. I have to say. When I was a kid, you know, I grew up in Boston. And I grew up, actually, outside of Boston, I grew up in a town called Newton, Mass.
Okay.
And right next to Newton is Brookline, where actually Conan's from.
Yeah.
And there was a guy who, there was an older guy who had a radio show Sunday nights at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was, maybe it was 11 p.m. Mm-hmm. to 1 a.m., something like that. But he would play comedy albums.
Oh, so good.
And it was the kind of thing where I was supposed to be in bed, asleep, sure. and whatever. And especially in the summertime, I'd have my little radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be listening to Bob Newhart or Bill Cosby. Or
so good.
It was, you know.
In their entirety? The whole album? Or
they
just...
would play. Yeah, they would play.
Wow.
They would play at least a side. And then
okay,
he would
yeah.
have his commercial, you know. And he did it from his house. Like, he would talk about it. He's in his basement and he's doing this thing.
Awesome.
So I don't know how he, you know. But I decided to go with Bob Newhart and not with Bill Cosby or Ted Bundy or whoever. I thought I'd stick with Bob. I hope there's no scandal looming.
You're right.
I feel pretty safe with Bob.
Uh-huh. That was one thing, too, is I was actually thinking about it. And I'm just like, of late, like, you're just, my brain's immediately suspicious now. Anytime I hold somebody too dear, I'm like, I have this man's son coming over.
Sure.
You know, and my brain's just like, God, there's never been a rumored scandal, right? I'm not going to freak out in the middle of this, am I? And kick him out of my house.
I know. It's like, I felt safe with Cosby. I can't
sure.
believe, you know?
Of
I mean,
course.
Good Lord. So I hope, you know, they don't find any bodies buried in a Mr. Rogers' house or something. And it's like, what? You know? It's a sad world.
Do you have, so how old were you when you're first hearing it then?
You know, I guess I must have been. I mean, I had already. His show was already on the Bob Newhart show.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I was familiar with him from that, of course. But I also would see him on those Dean Martin roasts.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think I heard the album until I was probably, maybe 16 or 17 something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, he had his sort of stand-up career prior to his sitcom career.
Sure.
And I'm kind of coming in late. So I'm, you know, I'm coming in the middle of his sitcom career, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Was it familiar? So if you're coming into it, so it probably didn't strike you that when he would do the phone bits on his show that he was mimicking his own act, probably?
No, it didn't. And you know what's funny was, it for some reason, even watching the show, it didn't register to me until years later.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was listening to someone talk about sitcoms or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, you know, you're writing sitcoms, like, you know, for instance, if you want to gear it to your star. And
sure.
If you're going to do Bob Newhart, he was famous for his telephone bit, so you would have a bit where he's on a telephone. It's like, huh, I guess you're right. And it's funny because now if I watch a rerun of the Bob Newhart show, mm-hmm. it's like, oh yeah, there he is on the phone, right, you know? Right. And it didn't occur to me, it was so sort of seamless, it was just part of the story, mm-hmm. somebody would call, that it didn't occur to me that it was like, oh, they're making sure they have a phone call with him every time.
Yeah, know? I know, and I didn't notice it until a year ago, like, you know, because I think I was looking up the Thanksgiving Day episode, which is by far one of my favorite episodes of all
time.
Oh,
the one they get drunk?
Yes.
Yeah.
So freaking good. That's a great one. I just went to a thrift shop and bought the first four seasons for $15. So,
oh, wow.
I know. So I'm just going to go through all of them, but the season four has that episode. But, like, I just was looking that up and I was watching. I'm like, holy shit, you're right. They had their marketing. It wasn't marketing, but, like, it's what he's good at.
Right. Exactly. You know? Exactly. So, you know, it's funny. I had a friend in college who would do this bit where someone would call and he would start acting like Bob Newhart on the phone. Just for us, you know what I mean? So if you're listening to someone on the phone call, he'd be like, what do you mean you're coming over? You know, he would do that kind of stuff. And then the person on the other end was totally puzzled.
Of course.
And we were dying because he was doing Bob Newhart.
Oh, it's so good.
In real life. Yeah, it was a pretty hilarious idea.
You know, you're making me think, like, obviously, a record album is a record album. It's an audio medium, but I think a big challenge and something. There's something to say about being able to act just that half of it, obviously. So there's the imagination where we're filling the guy in. But, like, to listen to it on the radio when you're already expected to use your imagination, I really like that you had that kind of extra level where you didn't have a comedy album in front of you necessarily. You had somebody saying, listen to this, and, you know.
Right. No, it was interesting that, you know, he was somebody that my parents liked, and I feel like my dad couldn't stand celebrities. You know,
okay.
they were just, you know, they were scandalous, they were
sure.
whatever, you know, and immoral, and they were, you know, arrogant or whatever.
Of course,
you know what
yeah.
I mean? So I really think Bob Newhart was the only guy that somehow got through.
Yeah.
And my dad, but it's interesting that, usually don't like things that your parents like.
Right.
You know?
Sure.
And there were plenty of things, you know, my parents used to watch the Lawrence Welk show when I was a kid.
Oh,
and I'd be
boy.
Like, I was physically ill, you
uh-huh.
know, it was in pain, you know, but Bob knew, and I didn't care for the kind of music my parents liked
yeah.
or whatever, you know, but I think Bob Newhart was the only guy who was like, yeah, okay, I like Bob Newhart.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too, is just talking with his son the other day is it did sort of, it didn't just strike me that, you know, Bob Newhart can get dark, but that's like, that is from what I'm now told his favorite type of humor. So I love that there's any subversive.
Right, absolutely. It definitely has these little dark elements or these little. It's very interesting because there's nothing graphic.
Yeah.
But he will, you know, when he's doing the bit about the chariot races, the
yes,
Ben Hur
yeah,
bit.
Yeah. Uh huh.
So, and he's talking about where it's like their car manufacturers and they're coming out with a new chariot, you know. This year, you know, next year or whatever it was, we're going to put the horses in the back.
Uh-huh.
So it was kind of a Volkswagen joke,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But also him saying, it's a much nicer view, was just very, you know,
yeah.
He's not saying, hey, you don't have to look at the horse's ass or anything
right,
like that,
right,
you know?
Yeah.
And even when he's talking about the cat being fixed,
oh yeah,
he doesn't say anything about the cat's balls or
right.
anything like that, you know?
Right,
he's just
right.
like, you know, when you get to have a cat, after about 8 months, you have to make a decision. And that's all that he needed, which is unbelievably, his subtlety was incredible to me, you know? And we don't live in that kind of age now.
No.
You know?
Yeah, and honestly, like, in looking at the track listing again, I guess I sort of forget, in listening to it, how long these are.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
I mean, you writing for television, you full well understand the difficulty probably in stretching a premise. Like, you have to stretch a premise and pound out as many as possible.
Right. But, you know, they're, generally speaking, it's a quick hit.
Sure.
Maybe a tag.
Sure.
And you're out. You
yeah.
know, a couple times, maybe two jokes on
yeah.
the same time. But you're in and out,
mm-hmm.
you know. And even if you're doing stand-up on TV.
Yeah.
You know, it's in the old, you know, they used to want you to change subjects every minute or two.
Oh, okay.
You know,
okay.
They didn't want you to go on and, you know, should we say you had a newborn baby.
Okay, yeah.
They didn't want you to do 6 minutes on a newborn baby.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
2 minutes on the baby, 2 minutes on something, you know, they,
yeah,
because if somebody doesn't have, if somebody's not relating, then they're not relating to the whole thing.
They'll tune out, right? You know? Yeah, okay.
So they, it was, it's interesting that that was kind of a thing of a minute or two in this, a minute or two of that, and whatever. And you'll see some people, you know, Gary Goldman did Conan recently where he just did a 6-minute bit. Mm-hmm. And I'll see people do a story occasionally.
Sure, sure.
But this was, a, what Bob was doing was very different because it was almost like a sketch.
Yeah, yeah.
It was almost like an SNL type sketch, mm-hmm. that he was almost narrating. In
sure,
a
sure,
way,
sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so and he's kind of doing this dialogue where he's often saying what the other person is saying,
sure, sure, sure,
or
yeah.
responding. So where from his response, you can tell what the person that said,
yeah,
that kind of thing. So it is very, very, you know, it was very creative. And also, I do think you had to, he's painting this visual picture,
mm-hmm.
that you have to kind of go, oh, I see. Okay.
Right, right, right.
You know,
which is actually perfect too. I mean, the more I think about how it was typical to present yourself as square dude in a suit, you know, at least visually. But it's perfect to just be that guy and a white phone where you can fill in as many blanks as you like. It's like listening to an album watching him, except for facially, he's a brilliant and underappreciated
yes,
actor.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And you know, we did a bit with him. It was kind of funny. Years ago,
mm-hmm.
You know, I write for Conan, and Conan was hosting the Emmys.
Uh-huh.
So this was his second time hosting, and a very funny guy, Kevin Dorff, came up with this bit that we did where the idea was these shows always run long, uh-huh. these awards shows. So we didn't want the show to run long. So we had a tube of air that only had 3 hours worth of air. And we're going to put Bob Newhart in. And if the show runs long, Bob Newhart dies. That's the idea. So we were rehearsing the bit, mm-hmm. the day before or something. So he has me sit in.
Mm-hmm.
So I get in the tube, and I'm playing Bob Newhart. And Bob is in the wings watching me on the monitor playing him. So we rehearsed the bit just to show him what it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's really one of my heroes. So, and I hadn't even met him. I'm just in the tube. Jeez. As him, you know.
Yeah.
So I got to meet him, and he liked the bit. But when he would come out and do it, and what would happen is, you know, every half hour or so on the show, would bring him out and see how he's doing, and then bring him back, you know. So we brought him up 3 or 4 times. But, and the funny thing is, the conceit was, he knew nothing about that he was going to die.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Where it's like, this was news to him on the air, that, oh, by the way, if there's no, and his looking around,
uh-huh.
what? What's this? Him, you know, pounding on the thing with the shoe, doing these little things that he was just, you know, that he just kind of ad-libbed. It was great. But as you're saying, you know, his face conveys so much.
Yeah.
You know?
That's an amazing bit, first of all. That is fantastic. Now I know. It's perfect that he would sign on for something. He's like, yeah, of course. Dying? That's great. I love it. I love it that you would try and kill me. That's so good. That just, like, yeah, he's, again, like, unbelievably hip. I mean, just listening to, again, I'm sorry I'm going to keep turning back to this, but, like, he was introducing his kids to Richard Pryor at, like, 7 and 8.
Wow, that's so interesting.
I love that. That's and like that was his favorite comic. He's a big Eddie Izzard fan. Like that to still be.
Well, that's the other thing is I know with the when he got the Mark Twain Award,
yeah.
right? I might be mixing it up. If I'm not mistaken, I think he had Richard Pryor presented to him, or
I think. Well, I know he did vice versa for
vice
sure.
Versa.
He definitely did that. For
okay,
sure, yeah.
But I knew that he really admired Pryor, and
yeah.
it's a hilarious coupling, the two
mm-hmm.
of them, you know.
Yeah.
But I think that's great because you know, Pryor's great, and Pryor's face is so expressive,
yeah,
and so on, you know, but Pryor's not subtle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I shouldn't say that. But he's much more explicit with things.
Sure, sure, sure.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Plenty of subtleties and nuances in his stuff too, of course. But
yeah.
But he would talk about the cat's balls being cut off.
Right.
You
yeah.
know what I mean? Or
for
the
sure.
horse's ass and whatever you're seeing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to go the other way.
Right.
But that works for him, you know.
To be able to charm people with these two totally different perspectives.
Absolutely. You know? And but, you know, they both, it's funny that we're talking about the two of them, but they both painted pictures and they both took their time with bits.
Sure.
And they would flesh out the bit, you know. You know, the one bit that Bob did about the real estate, the person trying to sell him the house. You know, he makes some joke, and I'm going to botch the joke, but it was something about real estate brokers maybe not being honest enough to be used car salesmen or
that, you're right, yeah,
that
okay,
kind of thing,
yeah.
You know, and that's the kind of thing. If I came up with something like that, it would be a one line joke,
sure,
know?
Yeah,
and then on to the next thing,
right?
You know, and this is just sort of the jumping off point, and he it's funny because it's. I botched it and I apologize, but it's a funny line, but it's just that's his starting place.
Sure.
And the way he would go on these tangents where it starts out, I mean, really one of my favorite bits is the guy returning the toupee.
Yeah, absolutely.
Such a great bit. And he starts out and he's so embarrassed and he's mumbling and he's like, listen, I'm like, you know, why don't you take these other people first and listen, I just whatever. And he's returning this toupee, and just the little things where, well, first of all, he's describing the toupee. He doesn't want to pull it out in front of the other people.
Right.
And it's the crew cut with the widow's peak.
Yes.
Which is so funny. I love that. It's a crew cut with a widow's peak, which is just a hilarious image.
Uh-huh.
And then, oh, Mr. Wonderful, is that what you call it? And the idea that that's the name of the toupee is so funny. But then he just takes it in this crazy direction where he's at a party, the toupee falls in the cheese dip, they have to fish it out of the cheese dip, he kind of ruins the party, and then his wife puts it in the washing machine, it's going around the washing machine, they have the window in the washing machine, his kids are sitting here watching it, you know, it goes off in this, it's like, how did we get here?
Right,
you
right.
know, so that's kind of one of the things I love is... his tangents were great.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, okay, is the guy embarrassed about bringing a toupee? But it's like, wait a minute, why are his kids in front of the washing machine?
Watching it
get the cheese dip off the thing. You know, it's really, it's almost like his stand-up is almost like sketches or almost like little movie scenes or something, you know, where they just go to a place that you're just not expecting it to go.
Right.
You know?
Did you... after listening to this, because you were saying earlier you have the same issue that I do, kind of confusing the first two button-down mind
yes,
albums.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Did you move on to the other ones after where he gets a little less dependent on the phone? I don't want to say dependent. That's not how I mean it. But, you know, where he just doesn't do phone bits.
Which one? What he's talking about?
Well, you know, like this one here, I found the other day just out of nowhere, Bob Newhart Faces Bob Newhart. But this is his, I want to say, fifth or sixth album, and it was only released a couple years after this one because he kept knocking them out.
Oh, okay.
And there's no phone bits on this at all. It's straight stand-up. It's still storytelling, though.
Does he have the one about, the joke about the cat on the roof joke? Do you know what I'm talking about?
It sounds familiar, but I can't say that I know exactly what
well,
you
that
mean.
Was one of the interesting things, and it's just this long story joke.
Okay.
And it was such a departure from what I normally did.
Uh-huh.
And it was a joke about somebody calling home and saying, oh, so-and-so, and they saying, you know, how's, you know, Fluffy, the cat, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the guy said, well, the cat died.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, don't just throw that at me. You know, you can't just, you know.
Right.
If you could, he's like, what do you want me to do? He's like, well, you know, maybe just drag it out. Well, you know, the cat was playing with some yarn, and then the yarn ended up on the roof, and then the cat went off the yarn, and then the cat... You know, it's this long story about how the cat fell off the roof.
Uh-huh.
So he's telling him to kind of ease him into it.
Yeah.
So then he's like, well, how's Mom? And he's like, well, Mom was playing with some yarn. <You know? laughs> So that's the joke. So he tells this joke on one of the albums.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm listening... When I was a kid, I'm listening to this... Kenny Mayer show, and then they play, I think it's Bill Cosby, and he tells the same joke. And it's just funny where it's on another album.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. I could
I'm
be wrong
to look it up
if it's Cosby, but I'm sitting there, and within an hour I'm hearing two different comics on their albums tell the same, like, you know, like a street joke, basically.
Yeah.
But it was, I was like, what is
that's
this?
That's hilarious. Yeah. You know, now the more you say it, now I'm thinking I have heard it,
but
I don't know
what album that is on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also, I didn't realize, you know, you remember, I thought the Abe Lincoln bit was on these.
It is on this first one. For sure it's on the first one. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The track listing is Abe Lincoln versus Madison Avenue, The Cruise of the USS Codfish, Merchandising the Wright Brothers, Khrushchev Landing Rehearsal, Driving Instructor, and then Nobody Will Ever Play Baseball. Those are the six that are on this. Oh. Only six tracks.
So Sir Walter Raleigh, Ben Franklin, and all that?
You know, and that's a very good question, because those are the ones that I always associate with it, too, and that must be from Strikes Back, is my guess. It's got to be from...
Oh, because I... Because I had that, like, this one, I had this with Superman and the dry cleaner.
Oh, yeah,
and
so yeah, on. Yeah. Yeah, yes. And I have seen that one. Actually, we were supposed to, that was one I was supposed to do Sunday with somebody.
Whoops. all right, because I had all these on this. Oh, that's interesting.
Well, we can always do that one, too. I mean,
they're all great.
Sure, of course.
I think the,
let's see what's,
you know what, that's the other thing that we didn't talk about is he... He must be a big history buff.
Yes, right.
You know, now his son, one of his sons, is a history teacher.
Yeah, you were mentioning that.
Yeah. So that I find, and I love history too. So I think that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But he does a bit with Sir Walter Raleigh.
Yeah.
He does the Ben Franklin going to the shrink.
Right.
He does the phone call with the Abe Lincoln, the Madison Avenue. Is great.
So brilliant.
It's so great, and it's also an interesting thing, because, you know, the marketing of the president, and, you know, has become a thing.
Absolutely. Know?
But it wasn't a thing at the time, and the idea of Abe Lincoln being marketed of no, people like the stovepipe hat,
right?
People like the long cloak. Uh-huh. You know, you need the beard. You know, all that stuff. Where, you know, I don't think Lincoln had an ulterior motive.
You know what I mean?
I don't think he's going, my image looks good if I have this or whatever. Yeah. You know? I mean, he created the image in
sure.
a way, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And then talking to him in this, like, irreverent asshole way.
Yes.
Just like a baby. Yeah. Doesn't he call him baby if he's yes. like a bunch? Yeah, so.
It's
that kind
so
of
funny.
Thing.
And the idea of, it's almost like Abe is a boob in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But, no, you got to wear the, what do you mean you're wearing sort of a cardigan, you know, all that stuff. And he's very sort of condescending to Abe, and Abe doesn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, there's really an interesting irreverence that Bob has, mm-hmm. you know. And even like with the Ben Franklin one,
mm-hmm.
it's not that Ben is thrifty.
Mm-hmm.
He's cheap.
Yeah.
He's cheap to the point that he's coming into his psychiatrist's office not even paying for his sessions.
Right.
He's skipping out on the bill. He's behind in his bill a couple of months. The secretary tries to grab him on his way out, and he's too fast for her.
Right.
You know, it's... and he's... Really, I mean... With Abe Lincoln and Ben Franklin, especially in this is 1960.
Yeah.
So... At the time, I mean, those were really the two most beloved Americans in history, I would think.
Sure, yeah.
You know? And, you know, he's poking fun at them.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of irreverent when you think about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
You know?
And ending in a really great assassination joke. Really great joke.
Yes. It's really... I'm curious if some people were offended in 1960, do you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, Carson would do a Lincoln joke once in a while,
mm-hmm.
and some people would moan, like would groan, and Carson would go, too soon?
Right.
And, you know, and here it is, he's saying this in the, you know, 1975 or something,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And 110 years later, people are like, hey, come on. You know? So it was probably... surprisingly irreverent, you know.
Yeah.
For it was probably edgy at the time, mm-hmm. or something, you know, in a weird way.
Did it probably didn't strike you that way as a kid, though, or did it? Maybe I could be wrong.
No. I don't think so. But also, you know, a lot of his stuff relies on people having a knowledge of history.
Sure.
And And there's some subtle things in there. You know, with the chariot bit, he's saying, you know, we got the new models that are coming out in 421 BC, and we have to look ahead to 420. It's a very clever joke.
Yeah.
And the idea that the numbers are going down,
yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's BC, you know, so they're going down.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I know from the clubs,
mm-hmm.
that joke is too subtle for most crowds.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And even jokes where a crowd might be smart enough,
mm-hmm.
they might not know the reference.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
They might not know Walter Raleigh put
right.
his cloak down
yes,
over
right,
the
right.
puddle so Queen Elizabeth can walk across and mm-hmm. whatever, you know, that kind of thing. And maybe it's a different era. People knew the American history a little better or
yeah.
something. Oh, that's American history, but people knew their history better.
Sure.
I don't know. But maybe he just drew a smart crowd,
yeah.
too.
Well, that was another thing, too, that we were talking about. And I had the worst memory for it in the world. But on this album, Bob Newhart Faces, Bob Newhart, etc., there are a couple times when he's just using some bigger words than you ever hear a stand-up now use. And again, I don't know what that's a comment on, but it does feel like it might have been a crowd thing. Maybe the right people came out. But he also has this obvious general appeal where he could have two beloved sitcoms that, you know, knocked ratings out of the park, you know, for I don't know how many years in a row. The first show lasted 7 seasons, the second one almost 10, right?
Oh, wow.
Something
oh,
like that. I think.
Right.
I could
sure,
be wrong.
Sure. No,
you know?
I
so
think
that's
right.
That's a ton of time to be
it
in the
is.
Public consciousness.
It is. But I do think, you know, you bring up a good point because his word choice is
yeah,
great.
Absolutely.
And there's that one with that real estate one bit again,
mm-hmm.
where the place is described as rustic.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going, well, you know, there's a fine line between rustic and ramshackle. And ramshackle is such a great comedy word.
Of course.
You know, it's just a word you just don't normally hear.
Right.
But it's also like, wait, this place is ramshackle? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's such a perfect comedy word because the word itself sounds funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the K sound.
Sure, of course.
Comedy-wise, it's got a great image because when you picture a ramshackle, you're picturing a shack.
Of course.
And you're picturing something that's falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a great word to
yeah.
use in a bit, you know?
And to also do it where I wouldn't describe him as having a great vocal range at all.
Right.
He's
right.
always playing a variation on Bob Newhart's
yeah,
voice.
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
But acting wise, obviously I think he goes through all these kinds of different guys, you know. His driving instructor's kind of an asshole.
Right, right.
Even though the bit's a little sexist and dated,
right.
he's a bit of an asshole, but he can do like radio guy voices. Like the Khrushchev thing, which I mean we talked about the other day a little bit, is kind of dated, but it still holds up. But you know, he's doing a radio announcer part and stuff, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, and it's funny because I do remember seeing he was in Boston. I don't know, maybe this was 15 years ago
okay.
or so. And he was, you know, on tour.
Yeah.
And he did the driving instructor bit.
Uh-huh.
And that's the thing with someone like Bob, not that there are many people like Bob, but people want to hear their old bits.
Of course. Of course.
So, you know, in 1960... you could do a joke about women drivers.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
It is dated, and I'm sure he'd admit that it's dated, but it's the kind of thing of... It's interesting how comedy things just change.
Sure.
You know?
Absolutely.
And Polish jokes used to be totally
of
okay.
Of course,
okay,
sure,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
And other things, and when I started in comedy, people did a lot of drug jokes.
Sure.
And it was that they're... a lot of coke jokes,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of they're cool, they do coke, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I don't know when, but the worm turned.
Mm-hmm.
And if a comic goes on and is talking about how they do coke, people don't want to hear that now.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
people haven't wanted to hear that for a few years. And it suddenly turned to, oh, you know what? We're not into this now.
Yeah.
We don't want to hear about that.
Right.
You know?
That seems to be like a niche thing at all, talking about, I guess you can talk about pot generally.
Pot
you can get away with, huh?
Pot is totally... that's totally in. People
sure.
do pot bits.
Sure. But hard quote-unquote hard drugs, not so much.
No, I haven't heard, but I see people do a lot of coke bits.
Uh-huh.
And I have not heard one in 15 years or 20 years, you know.
It's hard to do it right, too, after Robin Williams kind of knocked that shit out of the park.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. No, it's true, but it's also interesting how society changes. So, you know, women are bad drivers. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, you know.
Right.
And, you know, I'm probably a worse driver than my wife, but... I also think that, you know, his tone is never malicious.
No, absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
And even in this Boston Globe thing was like, well, it's like, you know, when your uncle is telling ethnic jokes at Thanksgiving, there's a little bit, there are some generational things.
Yes, absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
And it's funny, I was telling my kids just a couple of years ago about Helen Keller jokes. Now, there were a million Helen Keller jokes when I was a kid.
Sure.
And when you think about it, it's like, here's this woman. She's blind.
Uh-huh.
She's deaf. She's able to overcome these incredible obstacles in the early 1900s, mm-hmm. I mean, early 20th century. And even with these incredible obstacles, uh-huh. she's able to become a writer, a famous speaker.
Right.
She's really like the first sort of... proponent for you know, rights of handicapped people or whatever, you know. What an amazing person.
Right.
And how many jokes, we're talking about cruel jokes just bashing her. My kids were like, especially they grew up now with so everything's so PC, their jaws were dropped. Like, what? You know?
Right.
And that was, you would go to a dinner party and the funny guy at the mm-hmm. dinner party would have, it would rattle off 10 Helen Keller jokes.
Sure.
And everyone's like, oh, that guy's a card.
Right.
What a cut up.
Right.
Whatever expressions they used, you know, that's uh-huh. rich. Whatever they used, whatever sayings they used in those days, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of hilarious to think about now, you know? So, but it's interesting. That's one of the very few bits that he does that's dated.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, I'll listen to my stuff from 20 years ago
mm-hmm.
and go, oh, we can't do that now, or whatever, you know. Just because we're in this very PC time now,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I do wonder if things will change in 20 years or people will be like, oh, you know what? We decided to lighten up about that and we can actually joke about that now.
Right.
But...
Or we need to. I mean, to be fair, not that it's necessarily... the greatest comedians doing these jokes left and right, because anybody can make a 9/11 joke, but there are plenty of people who found a way to twist it and make it into an empathetic, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, it's hard to do, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, that's really one of the big, it's funny, that's one of the big taboos now, you know, still. I mean, I think that it's, I have seen a couple people do it in mm-hmm. a clever way and get away with it.
Sure.
But you have to be a skilled comic to get away with
it.
Sure, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
Especially if you're in New York
of course.
In Boston or something, you
mm-hmm.
know. And yeah, that's not an area that I've even tried.
Of course,
you know.
Of
what
course,
I mean?
Yeah.
It's but I it's funny. I was on a plane one time just a couple years ago. I'm coming back from Florida. It was one of these, like, I think it was JetBlue where they have the little TVs in front of everybody. So I'm watching the football game, other people watching whatever. And I keep hearing these big laughs. Like big simultaneous laughs from about 20 or 30 people spread out around the plane. I'm like, what are they watching? So I switch over, and they're watching Comedy Central roast.
Uh-huh.
And those are really out there. And there's no, they're not PC at all.
No.
They're really, they keep crossing the line. And you could hear these big laughs, and it's like, you know, we live in such a PC world that when people, it's funny, it's almost like with a roast, it's like, okay, we're allowed to break the rules tonight.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because there's this weird thing of, it's like, yeah, you know what, we don't want a racist society or society mm-hmm. that has stereotypes and so on and so forth.
Sure.
Totally agree. But then there are things where it's like, we still have to kind of talk about race at some point.
Of course.
You know, and I do think that my big problem with politically correct stuff is the tone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people can tease you about this and that, mm-hmm. and you can, you know, you can tease your gay friend about this and that, or mm-hmm. I can have a friend that can tease me about being bald mm-hmm. or whatever.
Sure.
And it's the tone of it. It's the different. You know, when someone's saying something maliciously, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? I've had people heckle me, whatever, where it's like, hey, you know what? I'm not amused. It's,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You know, but now I feel like we are in this place where you can't talk about race at all.
Sure, sure.
Or you can't talk about the sexes mm-hmm. at all.
Yeah.
And I think at some point we're going to have to go back to talking about them, and not in a mean-spirited way.
Of course, yeah.
But we can still poke fun. I feel like we should be able to poke fun at anything.
Sure.
You know?
Oh, absolutely.
So, and it always depends on the joke.
Oh, yeah, sure, you know? Of course. I apologize if I already asked you this. Do you have a favorite track off of this one? If we're sticking to the button-down mind here, let's go back. I'm sorry. Abe Lincoln versus Madison Avenue, Cruises of the USS Codfish, The Wright Brothers, Khrushchev, Driving Instructor, and the Nobody Will Ever Play Baseball. Is there one of those that stands out to you the strongest?
Well, the one that I've always remembered from when I was a kid was the... you know, I love baseball. The baseball one is great.
Yeah.
And it is hilarious of how... You know, he does such a great job of... These things that we sort of just take for granted,
uh-huh.
you know? And it's the same thing with the Sir Walter Raleigh mm-hmm. thing. It's like, wait, you're putting burning leaves in your mouth, you know? And the idea that's like, yeah, you know what? They didn't have that in England, or they didn't have that in Europe.
Right.
It came from the Americas. Why would that catch on?
Mm-hmm.
What do you know, who could sell that? What are you talking about,
yeah.
you know? And the idea of selling baseball to somebody who comes in from another. And, you know... I know that from my own life where, you know, I enjoy sports, I enjoy hockey, and I know some people are like, oh, I don't understand hockey. It's like, you're a football fan. Football is 10 times more complicated than hockey is. You take the thing, you knock it in there, you're wearing skates, that's it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, offside, okay. I can explain that in 2 seconds.
Sure.
Where football is so complicated.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, somebody coming over from Europe or coming from Asia or something, you go, hockey is just soccer on skates
mm-hmm.
with a stick.
Absolutely.
That's all
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
And even the outside is the same. You
mm-hmm.
know? So where football, and even, and it's funny because my son plays baseball, and, you know, he's a college baseball player, and we've gone to a lot of baseball games, and I love mm-hmm. baseball, and we've gone to a million of his games, and
sure.
you know, and when I'm at his game with my wife, and there is the infield fly rule,
mm-hmm.
I have to run away, because I can't explain it again. Uh-huh. It's been 200 times, and it's like, it's kind of a glitch in the game,
mm-hmm.
and it's one of these things, so what was that, and why did that, it's like, oh, no. Not this again. You know?
Right.
It's, and his bit is so great where it's just so complicated.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm.
And then when he's having someone explain the game, oh, I've got this great game for you, it's like, how did that ever catch on?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? So he's, and he's great at those things. Like baseball, like smoking cigarettes and things that we just...
Yeah.
They're everyday things that no one thinks about,
right.
we take for granted. And you yeah. go, how did we arrive at this point?
Yeah,
you
these know? Things that we have these incredible emotional attachments to that he turns
yes.
into mechanics.
Yes.
Just the pure mechanics of something.
Yeah, absolutely.
To make humor out of that is not easy.
Yes, absolutely.
You know?
And I also love one thing he does in his bits is... He will laugh at the person. He has this great laugh,
mm-hmm.
and he
oh,
does
God.
This laugh of like, oh, you think that's going to catch on? You know, and he's so sarcastic and so on, and he's
yeah.
kind of humoring them. You know, he's humoring Abner Doubleday that, mm-hmm. oh, baseball's going to catch on. He's humoring Walter Raleigh that, oh, you think people are going to be interested in tobacco and coffee and so on. Okay, whatever, you know. It's great. It's,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also something that, like, you could fall victim to. I'm trying to see. You could fall victim to doing the same thing over and over and over again and maybe boring the crap out of people. But I feel like he did. He put so much variety into it.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, that it was okay to be doing the same bit over and over and over.
Absolutely, because, you know, he would take each one in a different direction.
Yeah.
And that you didn't, you know, there was maybe that, the idea of, okay, he's going to take a historical figure and there's going to be, and kind of use some sort of anachronisms and you know, that sure. kind of thing. But I think that it's, they're great visually, mm-hmm. you know, and they always just go down a path that you're like, oh, I wasn't expecting, you know, I wasn't yeah. expecting Abe Lincoln to be, is wearing a cardigan now, right. and so on.
Right.
So, it's the same structure or whatever, but it's kind of like a sitcom. A sitcom has the same structure,
sure.
but within that structure, it can go in different places and have the different twists and things that you're not expecting. And, you
right.
know.
Did you ever, when you were first starting out in comedy, I mean, did you ever find yourself, obviously probably not mimicking Bob Newhart, but is there anything of his that you could feel that you sucked into your own work?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
absorbed?
I have to say, it's funny because the first time I did Letterman, it was actually by accident. I was at work. And I didn't even know I was in the running. And what happened was Dave got sick. And Bruce Willis was supposed to be the first guest.
Uh-huh.
And they had to have him host. So now they're down a guest. And they wanted to have four guests instead of three because, you know, Dave's going to fill in so much of the comedy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they call me. I'm at my desk at Conan. They call me and they go, here's a weird question. Can you do the show today? And I was like, yeah, okay. I've been waiting my whole life to do Letterman.
Of
sure.
course.
So they call me and I said, yeah, okay. And then they called me back and they go, okay, you're on.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to borrow a suit from wardrobe and go down and I do the show and Bruce Willis's manager's there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a long roundabout way to get to the story. Sorry about that. Talk about tangents. No wonder I love Bob Newhart. He was like, you're like a young Bob Newhart, which I was like, you know, 40, whatever, 42. But I really was flattered by that, and I have other people say, I think having sort of a unaggressive persona,
mm-hmm.
Almost polite persona.
Sure.
You know, in my act, things sort of happen to me.
Yeah, okay.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm often the victim, you know? I'm put upon.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you look and go, wait, you're kind of lashing out there, it's done in a put upon, like,
sure.
you know, that kind of thing. So I think, you know, I do jokes. I'm much more of a one-line joke guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in terms of that, my style is sort of more Rodney Dangerfield-ish or
sure,
something like that.
Sure.
But in terms of persona and the delivery,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I'm sure I Bob Newhart's probably like, that guy's been stealing from me from years. but I do think that I have a similar demeanor, I guess,
yeah.
to Bob.
And not that you would necessarily want to, but do you think because of that demeanor you could get away with pushing some of those
absolutely,
other boundaries,
absolutely.
If you wanted to.
Yes, absolutely. You know, if things are done in an innocent way, sometimes you can step back and go, wait, that's terrible. That's awful. If you think about the ramifications, you know.
Sure.
It's funny. I worked with this very funny woman, Laura House, recently. And it came off. She's like, oh, my God, this is terrible. Your wife's trying to murder you, and your kids are doing these horrible things. You're committing crimes, and it's all these things. It's funny. It's like, you know, if you really take my act literally, it's like, oh, this, your wife's a drug mule. This is terrible. You know. So, because it's obviously a joke, and it's so contrary to my persona. It's
sure.
Like, that's what we can get away with that. And
mm-hmm.
I think the same for Bob, you know.
Yeah.
Did your
family listen to much comedy? Or, I mean, how were you first exposed to comedy? I know it's kind of a basic question, but...
You know, I'm... My older sister is 9.5 years older than me.
Uh-huh.
And my brother is 7 years older than me.
All right.
So when I was a kid, you know, they would have some comedy albums that I probably wasn't supposed to listen
sure,
to, really.
Sure, of course, of
know?
Course.
And so I would listen to the Smothers Brothers George Carlin and things like that. And then I remember my friends who, you know, they're 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. It was that, you know, it's kind of that thing, I don't think it happens anymore, but, you know, you go into your friend's bedroom, three or four of your friends, and they shut the door and they put this, they take this album out from underneath the bed and they put it on where it's like, you know, my parents don't know that we're listening to George Carlin or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I remember listening to the Seven Dirty Words and that kind of stuff. And, you know, when you're 13 and whatever, it's like, oh, this is, you know, where, you know, my parents would have hit the ceiling if they came home, you know. And it's funny, some of my other friends, their parents were a little more, you know, hip or whatever. And that, you know, they would, and some parents would listen to it with their kids and enjoy, you know, whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
Holy cow, my, you know, there was never a point where my dad would want to hear that or whatever, you know. But, and then later on, I did have some Bob Newhart and some Bill Cosby albums, stuff that it was, I guess my friend lent me that I didn't return for like 4 years.
Of course,
whatever,
that kind of thing,
you know. But I remember listening to Rodney Dangerfield albums and things like that too. It was a different time. You know?
Was it solidifying in you that you wanted to be a comic, or was it just support of this thing you already knew you wanted to do?
It definitely enticed me.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
When you're hearing somebody and you're listening to Bob Newhart, and you're listening to his laughs, and you know, and it's like, oh, here's this kind of low key Catholic guy, you know, that. Yeah, I definitely feel like I was inspired, you know, felt like he was a role model for me. Absolutely.
How old were you when you first did stand-up or did any kind of comedy?
I was in college, so I guess I started out, I was about 20. And I, you know, for about a year, you know, I did shows. I was in college, so, you know, you go do an open mic. And then you can't do another show for 3 weeks because you get midterms or you get, you know, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So I would do shows sporadically. I did those for about 9 months. And then I started getting some paid gigs, and it would be like $20.
Yeah, you know?
And I lived in Boston, and, you know, I'd drive to Worcester for $20. And I remember my dad being like, "You're going to Worcester tonight? You're going to go?" And it was like, you know, it's not across the world. It's like, yeah, it's an hour away or 45 minutes away, and I'm going to be there for an hour or two, and then I'll be back at midnight, you know, whatever. Yeah. So, but then it was the kind of thing where, you know, my dad was like, "What are you doing? You know, I'm driving to Maine. I'm driving to Western Mass. You know, I'm driving to Vermont and then coming back home."
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So I'm getting home at 4 a.m. because I was in Vermont doing a show or whatever. You know.
Oh my God.
So it's funny because somebody would be, I'll meet somebody and they're like, "Oh, I'm from New England. Oh, what time? Oh, you wouldn't have heard of it. It's such and such." Oh yeah, I worked there. You know.
Yeah.
And I did every, you know, Elks Club and Cake, you know, Knights of Columbus, and but also every bar and some places was like, "Ooh, I wouldn't want to drive by this place. Never mind going in there." And,
of course,
you know.
yeah. Let's see. So, how about maybe this is the wrong time period to even ask the question, but I mean, are comedy albums something you get to introduce to your own kids or no?
Yeah, you know, what's funny is, you know, my kids would have like Mitch Hedberg's CD or something, you know, and, you know, I work with Mitch. We did a show called Late Friday on NBC one time.
Okay.
And very nice guy, you know, and a very clever guy. And it's a sad story, you know, but, you know, at this point in my life, I'm you know, I'm not going to come home and put on Comedy Central and watch stand-up. It's like, you know, I'm, you know, and I was always amazed when I'm in a comedy condo. You go to the show, you do two shows or whatever, you come back to the room, and the guy would, you're staying, you know, it's like three comics in the place, would put on, it's like, what? We're going to watch more, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, the album, the CDs are the one that I have. I'll have my friends, they'll give me their CDs, and I'll put it in a drawer.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, 20 years from now, I go, oh, you know, when you know, or 30 years from now, when we're retired and whatever, I'll be like, oh, it'll be fun to hear. My, it's like hanging out with your friend, listening to them.
Yeah, of course.
You know? But, yeah, I never listen to people's, and people that I think are hilarious and people that are friends of mine, it's like, I'm not going to come home and listen to more comedy or drive home and listen to more comedy after a show, you know? So, just as a matter of course, you know, but I do feel like it will be, it's like, you know, it's like this keepsake that I want, I do want to have my friends' CDs, so
For sure.
Yeah, you know.
You know, and I mean, I even find it difficult when I'm doing this podcast, is like, I recently finally sat down and ripped and listened to a bunch of albums out of guilt, and like, it pays off for the most part. She was like, oh shit, thank you very much, you just gave me something great to listen to. But like, I understand what you're saying, you know, obviously, and also you're gonna know way more comics than I do. So
well, you know, I put out a CD in I don't know, 2008 or something, and I cringe when I listen to it now, you know. And it's funny because the show that I did, I was in Florida, there was, I did, you know, 40 minutes or whatever at this theater, and the show went great, but the audience isn't mic'd well, so it just doesn't sound that great.
You
know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, the nice thing about listening to this, like, Bob Newhart album or whatever, he's killing, you can hear him killing.
Yeah.
And that's part of the enjoyment of listening to the audience enjoy it, too, you know? And I wish I hadn't put that out. I wish I had done it the right way.
Okay.
And had it done where I'm in a club, it's going great, you know, and that kind of thing, where you do 100 sets and you pick the best one and it's, and you put that out.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And even though I just don't think it represents me as in the way I would have liked, you know.
Right.
It's kind of like putting out it's like your headshot and your eyes are closed. It's like, why'd you put that headshot out? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
Stupid. So, what a boob.
Oh, I think your mic is pointing. Oh, it's okay.
Oh, I swear that never happened before.
The other thing, too, is listening to The Button-Down Mind, the hard part to accept is, even though I'm not a stand-up, the idea that this is his first time in front of an audience for two weeks. He's doing 2 weeks of shows they cut
together.
That's
the other thing that we haven't talked about at all, which is absurd that we haven't talked about that at all.
Yeah.
That's the most amazing thing of all.
Yeah.
This is untested material that he had written and came up with.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess his friends were like, yeah, that's funny.
Uh-huh.
And then he went out and can you imagine, it's like your first time on stage.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing 45 minutes or an hour.
Yeah.
You're putting it out as an album, which is absurd.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, any comic now, really, you have to work for 10 years before you should put an album out.
Sure, sure.
With easily, without exaggeration. And then you might be ready, but maybe not even.
Right.
He puts it out, his first time on stage, puts out its album. It goes to number one. It's this unbelievable smash hit.
Yeah.
Did he win a Grammy?
I think this one did. Hold on, let's see. I was just looking at it. Chart positions. Obviously, we know it's number one. It's Billboard. Billboard. Did it win a Grammy? Maybe this one didn't. Hold on, let's see. Entry.
It's.
There we go. Yeah, it did.
It's
Album of the Year.
Album of the Year.
And Newhart was named Best New Artist.
It's
fucking phenomenal.
It is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It would
Wait,
be
how
like...
How old was he at the time? Because I think he was only like 31 or 32, if I'm not mistaken, so...
But just... Yeah. What?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It is... It's absurd.
Yeah.
It really is absurd.
Yeah. To be that good.
To be... And that... Something like that's never going to happen again. There, you know, there are other things... Somebody might have put out a CD that is a big hit. And
yeah.
It's whatever. Okay. But it's not their first time.
No, yeah.
You know, that kind of thing is, It's if you saw it in a movie, you'd be like, come on.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
What I really like, too, is that after speaking with his son, we watched a bunch of Newhart clips just on different shows, including some of the roasts and stuff. And to watch him, and you're like, oh, wow, he's young and he's nervous. And you're like, oh, quickly he breaks out of it. He's faking nervous, too. Like, I don't know where that confidence came from.
Absolutely. And you know what? Absolutely the confidence. And I can hear, you know, when you start out, you're rushing to the joke. You want that punchline quick.
Sure.
You want them before they heckle you, before you lose them,
mm-hmm.
whatever. And you could see a comic where 10 years later, he could be doing the exact same stuff,
mm-hmm.
the exact same jokes. It's 10 times better.
Yes.
Because he's pausing in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
He's taking his time. He's punching the right words.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the tag where it belongs. You know, all that stuff that he just had that thing of. He had that timing. This is his first time on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had that timing. And I know when I first started getting laughs, mm-hmm. 6 years in, I would be talking over the laughs because I didn't know you were supposed to stop.
Sure.
You know?
Of course.
It was like, oh, I'm supposed to pause here. I'm like, well, I'm just keep going. And they're like, hey, we're laughing here, you
mm-hmm.
know? And I would do a thing of, when I first started, I would be bombing.
Uh-huh.
And then I would do an ad lib, which would get about bombing, which would get a laugh.
Uh-huh.
And then I would do a couple more jokes, and then I would do a, so I had all these jokes, these savers, just in case a joke didn't work,
sure.
and these bombing lines or whatever. So I'd start doing well, and I'd still do my bombing jokes, and the crowd's looking around like, what do you want? So we're laughing at your jokes. Like, what's your problem, you know? But it was like, I was so used to doing them that it was like, oh, I wasn't expecting that joke to work, and I did the saver that went unnecessarily, you know?
That's so perfect. Yeah, just to be so used to just it going one particular way. That's really funny. I wouldn't think about that. What I like to ask people to do, not that you need to tell people who Bob Newhart is, but let's pretend you do.
Sure, sure, sure.
Why recommend this album? Why give this album a listen? I think we just made the argument for it, but...
Well, you know, I think... If you're at all interested in comedy history,
mm-hmm.
you know, the fact that somebody wrote their material,
mm-hmm.
never been on stage, goes out and performs it for an audience, makes an album of it, it becomes number one, it wins a Grammy, all that stuff is so absurd, it's so crazy. I think that has to, even if just out of curiosity,
yeah,
just to hear,
yeah,
it's also fun, you know. My wife gets mad at me because, well, for many reasons, but this one specific thing I'm talking about. I'm not going to say hate watching,
uh-huh.
but I do a lot of curiosity watching.
Sure.
There are things that I'm like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's certain old movies, there's old shows. I saw on MeTV, they had this Abbott Costello sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what is that?
That's really odd. I did not know
Never
about
heard
it.
Of it. Uh-huh. I was... totally interest, you know, it's not like 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
So I DVR this thing, and of course it's terrible.
Sure.
You know, it's, but it was fascinating to me,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the set, it was like, oh my God, that set is the worst thing ever. That's supposed to be your set, you know what I mean? Like, like an elementary school production is better than this,
mm-hmm.
you know? And there's things like that. I'm fascinated.
Yeah.
You know, certain old, it's fascinating to me what was funny in the old days.
Mm-hmm.
One joke I see over and over in movies and things where it's, you know, 1930, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This buddy doesn't have a woman. Don't worry. His friend's going to set him up. Mm-hmm. I've got the perfect woman for you.
Mm-hmm.
You're all set for Saturday night. Don't worry for the big event. I've got her. And the joke is she's ugly.
Sure.
And that's the joke.
That's just the joke.
And you see it now and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know what
I
mean? And I've seen it 10 times.
Oh my God.
And
yeah.
when I see it now, I laugh so hard at it. It's
uh-huh.
like, you know, it's like that thing when someone makes like an inappropriate wedding toast and
mm-hmm.
people are horrified. I was at this one wedding and this guy was doing these raunchy jokes where there's this old woman behind me who was appalled.
Uh-huh.
And I'm laughing so hard, not at his jokes, I'm laughing at her outrage. You know, he'd tell a joke, get nothing, people are offended, the woman's grumbling, now I'm laughing,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
If it was just me and him, I'm not laughing at all. But the fact, her outrage was killing me. You know? So I do. It's fascinating. It's also nice to see how times have changed.
Sure.
You know, and it's with this whole Confederate flag thing. I'm so glad getting rid of the Confederate flag.
Sure.
I think that's fantastic. What I don't like is you take Dukes of Hazzard, which I never watched the show. That was not one of my I was too old for that show when it came out, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But to go back and say, we've got to digitally erase it, it's like,
No.
This is
silly.
A different time.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not take out words in books.
Right.
I want people to get rid of their Confederate flags.
Of course.
But if I'm watching something from another era that has a Confederate flag, that's a timepiece, and let's acknowledge that we did this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's almost like you're rewriting history. Let's pretend this didn't happen.
Yeah.
It's like, well, are you going to go back and take out every sexist joke now? Or are you going to go back and take out every whatever? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's nice to see things where... Sometimes you see something and go, oh, you see this gay bashing joke now? You can't do that now. Hey, we have grown as a society.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We have. It's nice to see that we have made progress or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not pretend that we were always there or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So I love listening to old albums and things. You know, my friend Emo Phillips is telling me about that rape jokes used to be okay.
Uh-huh.
Like in the 50s.
Yeah, yeah.
And he told me there was this joke about these two nuns being raped.
Uh-huh.
And one of them says, you know, forgive him, Father, he knows not what he does. Or
uh-huh.
You know. And the other one says, oh, this one sure doesn't.
Oh, my God.
It's jaw-dropping.
Oh, my God.
It's unbelievable. And to think that's like, there was a time when that was okay.
Yeah.
And this is a dinner party joke.
Mm-hmm.
It's shocking now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm fascinated by stuff like that.
Sure.
I love to see movies on turn a classic. Not that they're doing that, but they're doing things where you go, oh, you can't do that now.
Mm-hmm.
Or there are subtle things that it's just interesting to see how they mention a gay thing, but it's obliquely.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, I see. Or even like, oh, you know, I'm reading a book and they're talking about, oh, these two, they had a Boston marriage. I'm like, what's a Boston marriage?
Uh-huh.
Have you ever heard that term?
I have heard it before, yeah.
I had to look at it, I was like, oh. It's like, you know, you have these two women living together,
mm-hmm.
and they're lesbians, and it's 1900, and nobody says that. It's a Boston marriage.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting, you know.
Yeah.
So I love of seeing where we were as a society and different things. So I totally enjoy, and humor has changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of wordplay or things that can be considered, oh, that's corny now.
Sure.
Oh, okay, it used to be clever and now it's corny.
Right, right.
But then I'll still see a hip comic do a wordplay joke,
mm-hmm.
and get away with it, or maybe it's a dirty one or something that's, you know. Even, you know, Eminem and that, you know, window pane joke does a pain,
oh,
you know,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
It's
right.
Like, well, that's a pun. You
know,
he's doing 100%. A board play, you know. I mean, who's hipper than Eminem?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I'm always fascinated by, you know, listening to things from other eras and seeing what used to be funny and what,
sure.
what, you know, and what holds up. And some things, you know, I watched the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Mm-hmm.
So much of it holds up.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
it's so hip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also there are little things. I'll watch it, you know, and I Love Lucy, and there are some really funny bits.
Sure, yeah.
And then there's bits where, you know, Fred is so mean to Ethel.
Oh, my God.
At one point, I want Ethel to turn around and go, hey, fuck you, Fred. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he's such an asshole.
Uh-huh.
It's funny where you're like, oh, well, you can't do that now.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then there's other things. I'll watch an old show and I'm laughing at it sometimes, and then I'm laughing with it.
Sure.
Sometimes.
Sure.
You know, there's stuff from Leave It to Beaver that's really funny,
mm-hmm.
still. And then there's other things that you kind of, it's so dated that you,
oh yeah,
you laugh.
Oh, boy.
You know.
Uh huh.
It's also interesting to me. You watch I Love Lucy or a Dick Van Dyke Show, you'll see them smoking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's just a little thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a thing now.
No.
You know,
yeah,
in a sitcom where a couple
gone.
Takes a cigarette and
mm-hmm.
whatever. And it's like, oh, you know, Ricky and Lucy are smoking.
Yeah, I feel like Mad Men's the only thing to really bring back the reminder that that was a thing ever.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
Which, by the way, I will say, I used to work on that set. Smell very sweet. Very nice smelling set.
Interesting.
Only because they're herbal cigarettes. And I don't know how you can get away with that, though. I always wondered that, too, because they're legitimately lighting up cigarettes. But for some reason, herbal ones are okay indoors, I guess.
Well, you know, it's funny. When I started doing stand-up, there was every club people smoked.
Sure.
And, you know, I'd wear a sweater.
Oh,
I'd come home, you know, your sweater would reek for 3 weeks, of, mm-hmm. you know, and that was every night,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
And we'd, you know, and sometimes you'd lose your voice. It's like, I'm not smoking,
yeah.
But there's a cloud over the room.
Holy crap. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think, you don't think about how much things like that have changed. I know Bob Newhart used to smoke a bunch too, which you can't really tell, but eventually stopped.
Yeah. Yeah. I was reading that about him. I guess he had some, he had to have heart surgery or
oh,
something.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It was like,
that'll do
yeah.
it. That'll make you stop.
Yeah, but you know, everyone from that generation did.
Oh,
know?
Yeah. That's true. I mean, my dad started when, I think he said when he was 15, took several heart attacks for him to stop.
Holy
yeah.
cow.
Was all in a row, though, to be fair. Like, all on the same trip. He was like, thanks, Dad. Thanks
oh my
for
God.
Finally quitting.
That's a fun trip. Jeez.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for
sure,
talking
sure,
to me about
sure.
it. What do you have to promote? Where can people find you online?
Well, they can go to briankiley.com and see my dates or whatever. And mm-hmm. then, you know, I have my novel out. If they're interested in that, they can get that at Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And also they can follow me on Twitter at Kylie Noodles.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. And you, so far your review of your own album is not shining. So would you,
I'm not plugging my album, but I will plug my book and I'll plug my dates and my Twitter feed.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Sure. Sure.
Guys, go check out his website. Listen to Bob Newhart. Of course, any Bob Newhart you find is worth listening to. I mean, I still find his records for 50 cents every once in a while, which they're worth more than that, but buy them anyway. And as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com.